Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I am Sean McIndoe from The Athletic.
I almost said Ryan Lambert from Puck Soup, which is true.
Also true.
But, yeah, the number one thing going on in the NHL this week, as we record on Wednesday morning, and notably not Wednesday afternoon, so when every trade that we talk about later today happens, we didn't know about it yet. The number one thing is the Arizona Coyotes have become the greatest team in the history of hockey.
Yep.
15 goals in their last two games, am I right? Or 16? 17? I forget already, but it's a lot of goals. Like, what's his name? Nick Schmaltz. Yeah, 17 goals in their last two games. We won't talk about the fact that they also allowed 7. That's a different thing. But, yeah, they're just putting up big numbers on everybody. It's crazy. Yeah.
And playing against Ottawa and Detroit, so two excellent teams.
That's right. Yeah, Nick Schmaltz has 11 points in his last two games.
Yeah. Seems good.
I wonder what the, like, cap era record for two straight games is.
Hmm.
I have no way of looking that up or finding out, but I'm just wondering, is Nick Schmaltz up there? He has to be, right?
He has to be, because there's even, I mean, to have 11 points in two straight games, you need to have a 6-point game at a minimum.
Right, yes.
And the number of 6-point games is incredibly small.
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking, like, did Sam Gagner have a 3-pointer on either side of that
that 8-point night, yeah. Game. Were you watching that game?
No, I wasn't, but I think I was on...
I remember, like, watching that game.
I was on Twitter, and it was, I saw people reacting to it. And
yeah.
You know what? I just looked it up. He did. He had 3 points the next night.
Well, there you go.
So, but only
Nick Schmaltz
1 point...
tying a record.
...on either side of that. So if when Nick Schmaltz... And the Coyotes' next game is against the Maple Leafs, so
good chance to put up another 5 or 6, no problem.
That should be at least a dozen goals, I think, for them.
Yeah, really. And, like, the thing with the Saturday night, I guess it was more of a Saturday afternoon game, but the thing with that Saturday game was, I think he had 1 secondary assist, and all 6 of his other points were either he scored the goal or directly set it up. Crazy.
Yep. Yeah, and that...
A franchise that needs a W, you know?
Well, yeah, that's... Like, I wrote that this week. Like, I mean, they're terrible this year. We all know what's going on. We all know it's a rebuild. We all know it's the Coyotes. If you're a fan of that team, you got to have something to jump on. This is it. This is your...
Nick Schmaltz spiking the fucking football against, yeah, like, the 26th and 27th best teams in the league this year. Which, like, normally, who cares? But because when you're, like, the 29th best team, you're like, hell yeah, let's
exactly.
go.
Yeah. And the other thing we need to mention is Shane Gostisbehere in the first game. It's an 8-5 game, and he was on the ice for all 8 goals for and none of the 5 against.
You know, so here's a funny thing, and finally I get to tie the conversation back to college hockey. There was a game, the national title game in, I guess, 2013, maybe. He single-handedly drags a decent Union College team to the Frozen Four. They get to the final, and I think the game finished like 7-5 or 7-6, and it was a very similar thing where he's on the ice for, like, all 7 or 6 of 7, and, like, 1 of the goals against.
Yeah.
So, like, this is just a thing he'll do every 8 years, I guess, 9 years.
The reverse Brett Lebda.
That's right.
That's pretty impressive.
Oh, man. Freaking Brett Lebda.
And I guess, speaking of Coyotes scoring...
Okay.
Phil
Kessel. Is he even allowed to say this?
I love this story.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Phil, he had a baby. He didn't have a baby. A woman.
Imagine if he did, though. It was a real junior situation.
Yeah. That would, well, I mean, okay, it would explain a lot, right? I mean, I thought he was out of
the
shape.
The physique,
but
at least,
out,
yeah.
Yeah. But the coyotes fly him on a private jet to wherever this birth is taking place so that he can be present, which is very nice. But if I understand it correctly, first they dress him for the game and have him play one
shift. He takes a single shift, yeah.
So that his Iron Man record, which is not the record, but his streak,
he's going to run it down pretty soon. Yeah,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, he's like a season away from catching Keith Yandel once Keith Yandel's streak is no longer active, which may be soon. This I didn't even realize this because I would have been very very upset to know that Phil Kessel's Iron Man streak was almost in jeopardy, but thankfully the Coyotes, I guess, scrounged through every couch cushion in the office and strung together enough to get Phil onto the ice and then back home.
Yeah, and that only makes it all the more impressive that they still scored all those goals since they were playing a man short the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not that Phil Kessel's out there, you know, playing 22 minutes a night or whatever, but that's cool.
Yeah.
Respect.
That's the right way to do it. Although, I was thinking about it in a way, I'm not sure, like, I feel like this was very cool, but it also would have been very cool if the much maligned Phil Kessel, like, the only thing that stopped his Iron Man streak is that he just had sex. Like, that's it,
right,
man. Sorry. Phil was just too... Fertile, yeah. Phil just couldn't. That was the only thing that could stop the streak.
It would have been the most respectable way in Iron Man streak. The guy didn't get like blow out his knee, didn't get healthy,
yep,
scratched. He had sex.
It would have beaten Steve Larmer holding out on his contract and ending his own streak.
That's right.
Was probably that this would have topped it.
Yeah. So, respect to old Phil Kessel and the super team Arizona Coyotes. You can't trade anybody from this team now. You got to keep Jacob Chychrun around.
I mean,
right?
they're not officially eliminated from the playoffs. So I think
that's
you,
right.
You got a
big
run
coming up here.
Yeah.
But speaking of trades and what have you, you know, the deadline is 10 days away, 11 days away, and things are finally heating up. Every insider is now reporting that they can exclusively reveal that the teams that are thinking of buying are looking at their options, and the teams that are thinking of selling are weighing the market.
Yeah,
so
this is huge, and I've seen a couple of things I'm working to confirm, but
mm-hmm.
I've heard some of the sellers are not going to just give players away.
No,
and,
I think a lot of them are going to be looking for hockey trades, is
yeah,
what I've heard.
Yeah, and the buyers, what's interesting is the buyers apparently are not going to make a deal just for the sake of making a deal.
No.
That really,
well, why would you?
Yeah, so I mean, that has the potential to be significant.
Yeah. What I did like about this is that apparently Bill Guerin like told the Wild, yeah, I can't trade my way out of you guys are playing like shit lately, which rocks. Like, that, good for him. He's like, I'm not like opposed to getting help, but you guys have to do better.
Yep.
But we'll talk about the Wild in a little while.
They have not been good lately, but the thing with Minnesota is like they're in cap hell next year, so this would be the only year to go for it.
Yeah, but they got to go for it almost.
I think.
But yeah, I mean, so, but let's talk about the potential sellers first. We're finally hearing that now I'm talking about the damn Minnesota Wild too much. The Anaheim Ducks are like, you know what? All these pending unrestricted free agents we have as a rebuilding team, we're going to actually sell them. Probably, maybe. We still want to keep some of them, hopefully. Okay, well, that's fine.
But at the very least, they seem to have made the decision that those are the two options keep and re-sign or trade and not hold on to for a playoff run that certainly doesn't seem like it's
that's not coming together for him. It doesn't,
And it's, and you know, the, we've talked about this, but the interesting thing here is that it's a rookie GM stepping in to a new organization.
Right.
And normally this is where they'd say, oh no, you know, I need 8 months to think about
things. Gotta put my stamp on this, yeah.
Yeah, this guy's got to do his job right away. So it's they become a big team to watch because they've got some relatively good players, like relative to what often is clogging up the market this time.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it before, but obviously, like, Hampus Lindholm is one of the better defensemen that'll be hitting the market, like, in recent years, I would say. You know, like, compared with other deadlines and things like that, I think Hampus Lindholm can really help a team that needs defense in a way that, well, let's just say it, Ben Sherratt can't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to a lesser extent, that's true of Josh Manson, and, you know, for obvious reason, I think, you know, the Ducks will prioritize keeping Lindholm if they can, but does that make financial sense for them? I don't know. And then, you know, Rickard Rakell, that guy's a player. Everybody thinks he's good, so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lindholm's fascinating to me because he was, like, if you go back a few years, he was kind of the guy that smart people told you was much better than you realized.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, like, if you wanted to be a smart person or plausibly fake it, you had to be, like, big on Hampus Lindholm. And then he continued to be a good player, but he never got to the next tier. So
Right. Now
you're just kind of left sitting there going, oh, right, like, I remember that guy. Is he still secretly really good? Is he, everybody... as you know, he's not old, but he's potentially past his peak for sure. But yeah, you could see that being a guy that gets added at the deadline, maybe not in a big headline making deal. And then like two rounds into the playoffs, we're all like, yeah, why wasn't everybody in on this guy?
Because
he's,
I mean, he's not having a great season, like to be perfectly frank, but I also think that team's not very good. And I guess the standings reflect that, but it's just one of those situations where you go, well, you know, if you get a guy who, you know, as recently as like a year or two ago was still a pretty decent player. You know, I think you can put him in a situation to succeed that Anaheim perhaps could not, you know? So yeah, that's a guy I would definitely be very interested in, and Rakell is, I guess, kind of the same way. If you're looking for help on the wings, like there's a guy who can really do it. He, you know, he's a right shot. He's not the best defensive forward in the league or anything like that, but like he's not abjectly terrible, I don't think. So. You know, just a really solid, like, again, middle of your lineup option. And then, like, you know, the less said about, like, Nick Deslauriers, I guess, the better. But,
yeah. And then I feel like you're not a big Josh Manson guy.
I think he's, let's put it this way. I would say I think he's, you know, like, his ceiling is what Lindholm gives you now in the middle of a not very good season. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, if you get Josh Manson and you use him at his absolute best, like, he's kind of a... Like, his on-ice impact will be, at best, like, middle pairing. But I'd prefer him more as a shutdown guy, I suppose. You know.
It still feels to me like this is a... much better option than Ben Sherratt.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. All right. That's good.
I was comparing him to Lindholm. Like, if you're making a trade for a Ducks defenseman, then you know, go with Lindholm, obviously. But if it's between Sherratt and Manson or Christ, Justin Braun and Ben Sherratt, like I'd rather have the guy who's not Ben Sherratt.
Yeah, but it is. That's going to be interesting. I wonder what the dynamic will be. I mean, Lindholm and Manson are not. They're certainly not the same player, but they're not completely different either. And I do wonder if it's sort of like teams call for Lindholm, and then either if the price is too high, they you know, Josh Manson becomes like, we have Hampus Lindholm at home, you know, store brand version.
Yeah.
Or if it's just you get a bunch of teams bid on Lindholm, and then whoever, one team wins, and then you circle back to those other teams and say, okay, what about Josh Manson at a similar price? Having said that, Manson's a more physical guy, so there's going to be some GMs that'll say he's the guy you need for the playoffs, and maybe they'd consider him the better option. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny about, like we just heard for months, like Ben Sherratt is the number one defenseman on the market. Everybody wants a piece of Ben Sherratt, and you know, anybody with like that looks at stats at any point in the season is like, if you say so, I mean, good Lord. Okay. You know?
Yep.
And, I feel like we've heard about, been thinking about these guys on the Ducks for quite some time and never got that same level of like, oh, well, you know, everybody wants Hampus Lindholm. Like, everybody wants Ben Sherratt. Oh, no, it doesn't make sense.
The Ben Sherratt thing has been a masterclass in putting an idea out there.
Yeah, and, that's right.
You know, anchor theory and everything that, like, you did.
Yeah, anchor is
somebody,
right.
Somebody, yeah, yeah. Somebody, I don't even know if it was intentional, but I would love to find out that it was, because that would be cool as hell. Like, literally seeded the media marketplace with the idea that this guy was going to be the big prize at the deadline. And we've just gone with it to the point where it's like you say it enough and it becomes potentially true. I'm really interested to see how that goes. Now, I mean, it reminds me a little bit of, remember when like Chris Russell was a free agent and it was like, you saw all these reports and
everybody,
you know, obviously
lining
coming from his
up.
Camp.
Yeah.
That he was going to get like 6 million times higher, and then he just didn't sign anywhere and for a while and ended up getting a, you know, decent deal, but nothing crazy.
That really felt like one of those situations where he was like, I'm a $6 million defenseman. And everybody was like, oh, that's what you think? Okay, well, why don't you call us back when you're going to be more realistic about it? But anyway.
Yeah,
it does seem like defensemen in general are like the number one thing on the market right now. Like,
yes,
rumor is the Islanders are looking to sell just about every pending UFA, which they should. I don't know that I would particularly want to acquire any of those guys. Like, Zdeno Chara are good in the room, I guess, but not on the ice anymore. Green, kind of same thing. Zach Parise, no, not really. Cal Clutterbuck, no, not really.
Somebody will talk themselves into Cal Clutterbuck.
Yeah, and probably,
for sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if Andy Green ends up in a similar situation. I don't know so much about Chara just because I feel like with him in particular, he doesn't have a no-trade clause, but he has an implicit no-trade clause of like, we won't trade him if he doesn't want to go.
Yeah,
because
yeah, and
50.
It's up to him. But this is in theory his last year, and he's got a cup, so yep. It's not like. But I mean,
first
again, if he's on the market, somebody will go out and get him. And it would probably be, well, I was going to say it's probably one of those situations where you're not even too much worried about what you get back. It's like, let's send this guy to a good home. But
yeah,
then
sure.
it's Lou, so who knows? I don't think Lou has human emotions, so. I mean, I think I said this a few weeks ago, like Chara's not a great player anymore. You're not getting him for what he's doing on the ice right now, but I'll tell you right now, like if the Toronto Maple Leafs acquired Zdeno Chara, everybody would love that deal. They would absolutely love it. And Chara could be on the ice for 3 goals against every single night. And people would still be like, what's wrong with Rasmus Sandin? How come he didn't
do
anything?
Yeah.
You'd be like, he was on the bench, and they'd be like, oh, Chara's got to talk to him or something.
That's right.
But yeah, it's there are guys that'll want and Clutterbuck too, and Clutterbuck I could see because is he UFA this year?
I think so. Not thinking about it, but I'm pretty sure.
You trade him, and then he goes back to the Islanders probably.
This is his last year. Yeah, 34 yeah, so. Years old. God. A classic situation of I feel like Cal Clutterbuck just came into the league, and he's 34. So you gotta love that.
But he's long on his career, man. That guy is.
Yeah. No.
Again, you drop him on someone's fourth line. Put it this way: I don't know that you desperately want your team to get Cal Clutterbuck, but you really hope your team doesn't run into the team that got Cal Clutterbuck because you will notice him during that series. For sure.
Yeah, no, he'll be credited with 9 hits, and you're like, he only took like 3 shifts. I don't know how that's possible, but okay.
Yep.
But yeah, the other defensemen that are like, have long been rumored to move, John Klingberg, probably not going to move him now. They're going to make the playoffs, so why would they do that? I mentioned Justin Braun. I think... anybody in the Ben Chiarot market should be in the Justin Braun market instead. Mark Giordano, I think he would probably like to be moved.
I'm surprised that name isn't more prominent than it is, given his, recent history.
Maybe that's just one of those situations where, the team hasn't really talked to him, but... again, like he's another guy where it's like, don't count on him for offense anymore. But he still moves the needle defensively. Like I think you can count on him on your PK and stuff like that. Even at his age,
guy won the Norris Trophy a couple of years ago.
Yes, he's a good. He's surprised like good. How do I want to put this? It's not necessarily surprising how good he is. It's surprising that he has succeeded in the role Seattle has used him in. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully he can find a good home and compete for a cup because that's a defenseman I've liked for a really long time. Is there anybody else who's a...
We kind of touched on Chychrun, but...
Yeah, and the rumor is that, as you might expect... 600 teams are in on him, and who knows what their level of interest at the price point the Coyotes would want is. But the other defenseman, of course, that people are all of a sudden talking about is PK Subban.
Yeah,
which buyer beware. Just,
it's a tough one. I mean, I you talk about a guy with playoff pedigree. Subban's got it. I mean, he's been a big moment guy for a long time, but it's even on the expiring contract, even if at half the salary.
You would need double retention.
Yeah, which at that point becomes, how much are you going to give up for the guy? I could see it happening, but I think it's unlikely.
Yeah.
Here's the other guy that is Ristolainen. What do the Flyers do? The most recent rumor was
they want
an extension.
Oh boy, I wouldn't want to get involved in all that if I was them. But GMs talk themselves into dumber things all the time. So
they do. We did on the Athletic board. We also had Jeff Petrie pretty high. I guess he's another one of the guys who Martin St-Louis came in and was like, hey, how about try being good?
And he was like, got it.
Terrible.
Okay.
He was like, all right, perfect. I'll give it a shot. And then he was like, yeah, that worked way better.
I'd like a Jeff Petrie on my team if I'm, again, looking for like a kind of middle pairing guy that I can put in advantageous situations,
I'd like last year's Jeff Petrie on my team. I certainly wouldn't want first half Jeff Petrie. The thing with him is he's still signed for 3 more years.
Oh, is he really?
A lot of money.
Oh,
yeah. Well. He's not a rental. So that's more of a case of, if you're Montreal and you're smart and you get the chance to slip out of that contract.
Yeah, even if you retain half, right? Like,
I don't know if I want to retain for that long, but I
you're not trying to be good anyway, so what do you care?
Yeah.
I certainly want to see, I want him to get a lot of power play time, be really good for a few weeks, get the narrative out there that he is shaking off whatever was wrong in the first half. And then, you know, I'm going to act like I want assets back, but then, you know, some team's like, we'll give you a fourth and no more. I'm right. Like, ah, you drove a hard bargain. Okay.
Yeah.
And
then the problem is he makes $6.25 million. If you want to whittle that down to 3.125, we can have a convo about that. But it's just a lot. And the other thing with Petrie is I believe he has a 15-team no trade list. That's right. I just scrolled over his name on Cat Friendly, and 15-team, half the league can't be traded to without his say so.
The interesting thing here that
Ben Chiarot also has a no trade list. Now that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all the smart teams. They're like, yeah, we self-select for your list. The thing that Eric said on The Athletic that was maybe interesting is that if the rumor mill is that if Dallas did decide to move Klingberg, they could then turn around and get Petrie for, you know, still come out ahead on assets.
Yeah.
And have a guy.
That actually makes a little bit of sense.
Makes that you could see something like that, but... Yeah,
I hadn't thought of that. That's good. I like that. Let's do it. Let's make that happen.
I'm gonna keep an eye on this DeHatcha kid. He might have a future.
The other thing, speaking of defensemen, whose name is coming up, you see all this Shea Weber talk?
I saw it, yeah, and then it kind of got, Elliot kind of shot it down this morning.
Well, so he did and he didn't, because he said that, like, because people were saying, oh, a team that's up against the cap would trade for him, much like a Tampa would, to like, be able to exceed the cap. And I don't know that that really works for, like, a Minnesota or any team. Like, I don't think it works at the deadline period, because, as Elliot pointed out, you have to... activate the player off the LTIR and then deactivate him again. I think you can do that in the summer. I don't like that would make sense to do in the summer, but that doesn't help. Yeah. Minnesota
this now. Is the part of the cap that I don't know that anyone.
Yeah, that's right.
Understands that isn't a capologist in the NHL, because this is like, remember a few years ago when the Leafs traded for David Clarkson and you're like, what? And it was like, yeah, it's cap shenanigans. And I guess the idea was that it could make sense, but as
well again they traded his, that wasn't in season, right?
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it was so it was something that I think was floated on Elliot and Jeff's 32 Thoughts podcast, and then in the written 32 Thoughts today, I guess Elliot got feedback from around the league on why it wouldn't work now. But he does still think that in the offseason, if only to reach the cap floor.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It makes a lot more sense for an Arizona and Ottawa or whoever who are trying to you know, boost their money and give themselves, you know, like, because the thing with Weber's contract and you know, it's just the cap recapture thing of like, oh no, he makes like $38 next season because he made $52 million in the first year of his contract.
It was one of the last of the backloaded contracts. Front-loaded, back diving contracts that's still out there. And so you can you pay him $6 million, which I don't even know if you pay him or if insurance picks it up, but you get a seven something cap hit to help you reach the floor, which is completely ridiculous that the league lets that happen, but man, what are we going to do?
The final 4 years of his contract, he makes a total of $6 million, which is equal to the amount of money he made this year alone. Okay.
He could retire and then Nashville has to pay a $47 million.
Oh my God. I don't want it for Nashville, right? But I do want it to happen because it would be so... Because the league would have to be like, actually, Capture Capture's fake.
Yeah, right. And then they would have to cancel it, in which case people in Vancouver
would absolutely
flip out. Rightly so, but yeah, it would be very entertaining. Like, they would be completely justified, but it's already a, you know, not the most chill fan base. And it, even when it's something completely unjustified, give them something that would be absolutely justified. And yeah, I think get ready to go make out in the middle of the street, because I think some things are getting set on fire.
You know, we'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. You know, relationships take work. A lot of us will drop anything to go help someone we care about. We'll go out of our way to treat other people well, but how often do we give ourselves the same treatment? Whether it's self-care, coaching, or therapy, there are ways to invest in yourself, and you should do it. You deserve it. And this month, BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to take care of your most important relationship, which is the one that you have with yourself. Whether it's hitting the gym, making time for that haircut, or even trying therapy, you are your greatest asset. So invest the time and effort into yourself like you do for other people. If you knew somebody and they seem to be struggling, or they seem like they could use some help, you would nudge them in the direction of doing what they needed to do. There's no reason not to treat yourself in the same way. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Give it a try. See why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Puck Soup listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/puck. That's BetterHelp.com/puck. You know, a lot of people didn't even make resolutions this year. And you know what? I get it. I didn't either. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't still find a way to shake things up, whether it's by switching up your workout routine or going someplace new. Whatever way you challenge yourself this new year, there's no better way to do it than with a pair of Raycon wireless earbuds in your ears. Raycon wireless earbuds are the best way to bring audio with you, because no matter how much you shake things up, literally, no matter how much you shake, you know they won't fall out of your ears. Their everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. There's also awareness mode for when you need to listen to your surroundings, so you can take Raycons with you wherever you go. With optimized gel tips for the perfect in-ear fit, these earbuds are so comfortable and they will not budge. Trust me, I'm one of those old school people. For years, I always did the over-the-ear headphones when I was going for a run or at the gym, because I figured if I had earbuds, one of them would fall out, I'd lose it, down, it would go down a sewer drain or something, and everyone would laugh at me, and I've wasted my money. Has not happened with the Raycons. They stay in there. And they also offer 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life, and they're priced just right. You get quality audio at half the price of other premium audio brands. It's no wonder Raycon's everyday earbuds have over 48,000 five-star reviews. And right now, Puck Soup listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/puck. That's buyraycon.com/puck to save 15% on Raycons. buyraycon.com/puck.
I think the thing we need to talk about now is, you know, we've been saying for months the Eastern Conference playoffs are all set. There's nothing to really talk about with regard to pretty much where anybody's going to finish. I think maybe you would say the Caps are dropping off pretty precipitously these days, although they did beat a very good Calgary team last night. But the Western Conference has gotten crazy lately. Speaking of the Calgary Flames, they're on an insane hot streak right now. They've just really, you know, they're not going to catch Colorado or anything like that, but they're looking like the clear number two in the West at this point. And so, yeah, let's just do the Pacific first. Los Angeles Kings, 8-2 in their last 10.
keep waiting for them to fade. I keep sleeping on them, and they're not like it's not that they're not fading. They're getting better.
Yeah,
they're boosting. And if I haven't seen a lot linking them as serious buyers, but if they wanted to,
they've got
a war chest to work with.
I think the team you hear them connect, or the player you hear them connected to a fair amount, is Jacob Chychrun. Where it's like, oh, he makes perfect sense for them. You know, they have the assets to give up.
They and not a rental, not like a, you know, let's make one crazy run.
No, yep, and also he's like, what, 23? Like, he pretty much fits in with their overall group. He's signed long-term for very reasonable money. Like, I think it makes all the sense in the world. And the other thing to say about the Kings is that, they have had a relatively soft schedule lately, but that also means that earlier in the season, it probably wasn't as soft, right? So like they beat the Bruins in overtime most recently, but before that they played like Buffalo, Columbus, the Islanders, the Ducks, the Coyotes. Like, okay. Yeah. They should be winning all those games, but you know, we saw it last
night.
Still
got to win the games.
You got to win the games. Colorado couldn't beat New Jersey last night. So, and not that it really matters for Colorado, but the point is, you still got to beat the bad teams, and they've been doing it. So, good for them. You know, I think at this point, I'd be pretty surprised if they dropped off. They're not
and even if they did drop off, they've got some padding now.
Yeah,
that,
correct.
You know, they could survive a rough patch.
Yeah, and like this is coming at a time when Vegas is kind of on the downswing. I think they miss Mark Stone more than we all thought they would.
Vegas is the most interesting team to me. Like I did a thing last week where I was I did an update on the contest that I run at the beginning of the season where you got to pick like who's going to make the playoffs, who's not, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And anyways, I just did an update and I realized I wrote the whole thing talking about like here's the picks that are, you know, everyone thought Cole Caulfield was going to be Rookie of the Year. That's not going to happen. This isn't going to happen. The Islanders are going to screw a lot of people. I never mentioned the Golden Knights as a team that could miss the playoffs because it just didn't. Okay, and then I look at the standings. They're in legitimate trouble as far as like right now they are the eighth best team in the West by points percentage.
Yeah.
This isn't a games played thing that like they are and they're fortunate in a sense to be in the Pacific. So they're going to, you know, you just got to finish in the top three.
Breathing room, yeah.
But if it's basically Vegas and Edmonton right now for the last spot and that's fascinating to me because both of those teams, I mean, we talk about how Edmonton, if they miss the playoffs again, it's a disaster, and it is. But imagine Vegas missing the playoffs?
Yeah. They,
after all the loading up they've done?
They'd be pretty unhappy with that turn of events, I think. They're just, boy, like, you want to talk about a team that feels a little bit cursed this year. Like, every time somebody gets healthy, somebody else goes on the LTIR. So yeah, I, you know, again, like they're in a situation where, you know, who else is playing pretty badly lately is the Edmonton Oilers, and that's the only team they need to really worry about in the standings, because like Anaheim's probably not going to catch them. They're 5 points back with an extra game played.
Yeah, Anaheim's still in it, but I don't, especially if they move guys at the deadline. I mean, that'll be...
yeah. I think. They're pretty much done. They seem to have packed up camp and started heading home for these last 20 whatever games. But the Oilers, oh boy, ooh, they, you know, Mike Smith's
hurt again.
Messy
again.
It doesn't really help, and
which, you know, every team deals with injuries, and you know you can't give. But I think a lot of teams, if you said, "Hey, our best goalie's hurt," you'd say, okay, maybe we give you a bit of a pass.
But when your best
goalie, your best goalie is 39,
and he's Mike Smith, like he's not even a good 39-year-old. So
yeah, but it's like, what did you expect? I mean, if you didn't have our 39-year-old goalie missing stretches of time here and there in the plan, then you didn't have a good plan. So
right,
So they 5 in a row when they made the coaching change, and since then they've won 2 of 8.
Yeah, they're in a lot of trouble, and I don't know what the fix is. You know, like you can't count on Vegas to keep playing this badly, but you also can't count on your own goalie or goalies, I guess, to allow you to make up ground. So I don't know. Don't know what the solution is for them.
Well, that's the scary thing, right? If you're the Oilers, you're looking at the team you're chasing, which right now is Vegas. And you're going, you know, what are the odds that they spin their wheels at 500 to give us a chance to catch up? And it's they're not great. I mean, they're not far behind. They're one game in hand. If the Oilers win that game, it's a 2-point gap. So, you know, it's a lot.
It's still a win and a half, as they say in baseball, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. But I mean, you got to figure Vegas is going to figure it out again at some point, in which case now you're chasing Dallas and Nashville, and
the Stars are white hot all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And Nashville is kind of in a similar boat to Vegas and Edmonton, where you're like, oh yeah, they're not playing that well. And, you know, I think part of that is you look at, you know, going into the season, you would have said, well, the Predators feel like at best a playoff bubble team, and they're not getting the goaltending lately. You know, they got extremely good goaltending for a huge chunk of the season and last season. But like, can you count on UC Soros the rest of the way? I don't know. They've allowed a lot of goals they're just not playing well in general. I never thought they were all that good, but you know, a classic situation where the goalies make the difference or whatever.
Nashville is a classic team that. And there's a couple of these teams every year that I didn't buy in for half a season. They made me look bad. I finally bought in, and then they immediately were like, haha, just kidding.
That's right, yeah. It's really, I don't know. Like, they're at least in a situation where they banked a bunch of points, you know? Usually you get to 45 points in or 45 wins in a season, and you're in pretty good shape to make the playoffs, and probably especially in the West this year. They're only 13 away, and they have 26 games left. They only need to go 500 the rest of the way, and I'd be like, yeah, they feel like a playoff team, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I guess we'll see.
But yeah, and then I guess the other thing is Vancouver not totally out of it?
They're out of it. Come on. Let's be serious.
Yeah. And most of the models have them around like 10%.
Yeah, which is they're out of it.
You know, pretty out of it. And then Winnipeg seems just about completely out of it, which is shocking to me because I thought
they'd be better than
all
this.
In on the Jets.
I thought they'd be better than this for sure. I thought they really improved their decor, but
yeah, better blue line, one of the best goalies in the world, and a ton of offensive firepower somehow has not added up to anything good, and part of that's that Connor Hellebuyck hasn't been good lately, but he's
like, what do you want him to do though? You know, like they have the same Jets problems that the Jets have always had, where it's like, oh yeah, we cannot play defense, we just can't physically do it, and you know, like Mark Scheifele has not had a good season. You know, I'm sure he still has a bunch of points or whatever, but like Blake Wheeler has been bad, like horrible.
Scheifele's starting to show up in some trade rumors, which is been shocking at the beginning of the year. But I think there's some patience running out.
They gotta look at some things, man. Like they can't just go, you know what, we'll bring pretty much the same group back next year. You know, like. And they have some good youngish players like Kyle Connor, Nick Ehlers, Pierre-Luc Dubois, where it's like, yeah, you know what? That's like a decent enough core that if you want to do a quote-unquote rebuild on the fly or whatever, not that Mark Scheifele's old or anything, but, you know, again, like this is just a team where it's like, oh, a bunch of these guys just have never gone in their own zone for 1 second all season.
Hmm.
And, you know, like, I do think the way people talk about defense is, like, in general in hockey is pretty overblown, but, like, with the Jets, it's like, oh, this has been a problem for 10 years. So, at some point, maybe they just need to hire a better coach, you know? And they
will get that chance.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm not high on the Jets, obviously, but, like, they're, you know, anybody who's, like, you know, who's going to pick it up is Connor Hellebuck. It's like, well, I don't know what he's supposed to be.
No, that, there. I mean, that would be classic kind of hockey fan brain of always blame the goalie. But, lately hasn't been great. Here's what I love about the West right now. I'm looking at Dom's projections. He's got Colorado, Calgary as sure things to make the playoffs. Minnesota, St. Louis, both like hovering in the high 90s. So not quite locks, but pretty close.
Central pretty locked up though. Yeah.
Yeah. Dallas at about 85%. Nashville's about 80%. Vegas just north of 80%. The Kings at 80%. And then Edmonton at 60%. And those are the contenders. Now, if you were paying attention, I just named 9 teams that are at least 60% for 8 spots, which is great. I mean, it works. Basically, all the teams ahead of Edmonton that are not quite sure things, Edmonton is collecting all of that not quite sure thing into their own percentage.
Yeah.
But what it means is you've got 9 teams that are looking at this saying, we should make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And one of them is not going to get a chair when it's over, and then the repercussions of that are have the potential to be significant. But if you're an Athletic subscriber and you don't look at Dom's projections, it's really interesting because you can just see it all in like graph form and how in the last week LA and Edmonton have pretty much switched places, which does imply that they could switch again in another couple of weeks. But it's the trends are all wrong for the Oilers right now, but they're still better than 50-50 to make it, according to how the math works out.
Yeah, let me put it this way. You know, at this point, you could tell me any combination of those 9 teams that you just mentioned, like make the playoff. Oh, Nashville misses, Dallas misses, Edmonton misses, Vegas. Like, I guess the only one I'd be surprised by is Vegas misses. Like, Vegas ends up the odd team out of that list. That would be the only one that I'm like, whoa, really? But like, Minnesota's not safe. They're in a situation where, let's put it this way, if you had said, oh, you know, they're 2 points up on the Dallas Stars at any point in the season, I'd have been like, no, that can't be. Like, is it October 7th? Like, what? How could that be?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, here they are. So,
yeah. And another team where missing the playoffs for them would be
a disaster. Absolute disaster. Absolutely.
This year, which is why, you know, partly to go back to what you said with Guerin signaling some hesitancy. I mean, if anything, there should be urgency here.
Well, I think
got to make a move.
Yeah, I think the thinking with that, I guess, is that you don't want them sitting around going, he's going to trade for Ben Sherrod any minute now, and it's going to solve all our problems. You know, like,
yeah,
he has to kind of say, like, this is your fucking mess. You fix it. You were good 3 weeks ago. What's the problem? You know? And I don't know what the problem is. I guess I haven't watched enough Minnesota Wild games the last few weeks. And when I have, I've been like, oh, they're playing fine. I think I've just mainly watched their wins, I guess, which are few mm-hmm. and far between. But I watched the third period of their game against the Rangers last night. They won 5-2. And the Rangers are very interesting because we mentioned 32 thoughts earlier. They were talking about, oh, maybe the Rangers are ahead of schedule this season. And I'm looking at everything going on with that team, and I'm like, the New York Rangers are ahead of schedule? Are we sure about this? Like, what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, record-wise, standings-wise, yes.
Yeah, right.
They were, you know, this was the year that, okay, this is our year to make the playoffs. You know, we'll be the wild card team. We'll get into the race, whereas they're pretty much already home and cooled out.
Yeah.
As long as you don't dig much deeper than that.
Right. If you're looking at it in terms of purely looking at their record, then yeah, of course you're like, oh, look at the Rangers. Unbelievable. Wow. But, you know, they're one of the worst. 24th in 5-on-5 expected goals. Percentage, I should say. Expected goals percentage. But their power play is incredible, which it should be with all that talent, right? And they have the best goalie in the league this year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as I was watching it, I'm like, I feel like every time I watch the Rangers, they're getting their asses kicked. Why are they this good? And so I looked it up. Did you see this stat from last night?
No.
Okay.
I don't,
They are 12-14-2 against current playoff teams.
Okay.
Which is bad.
That's not great.
Yeah. And four of those wins were either in overtime or the shootout.
Okay.
So in regulation, they are 8-14-6 against current playoff teams. They've been outscored 84-66 in those games. All bad. That's like 45%.
So that would explain why they always seem to be doing poorly when you're watching.
Yeah, because I only watch them play.
Yeah,
I don't watch
them play Buffalo.
Yeah, I'm not like, oh, I can't wait to settle in for this Flyers-Rangers game tonight, you know? But somebody then pointed out, against teams currently in a playoff position, the Rangers are 12-6 with Igor Shesterkin in net, and 0-8-1 with anybody else. So
yeah,
we've located the problem.
Uh-huh.
It's the backup goaltending. And also the team stinks.
We saw it again last night.
Right? Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Georgiev was in that. He was awful. And, like, I have a problem in hockey. The way sometimes people talk about teams as though their goalie is, like, independent of the rest of the team. You know what I mean? Like, So I don't want to say the Rangers clearly are the worst playoff team in the East, because they're not, because they have the goalie who's having the best season in the world. Right. And when I pointed these stats out last night, like, someone was like, yeah. And if you take Chris Kreider shooting 20% off, then it's like, well, I mean, Chris Kreider's on the team. I don't know what you want me to tell you, you know, like, he's having an uncharacteristically great season. He's closing in on 40 goals already. He's awesome. He's been awesome, I should say. And he's a player I've always liked quite a bit, but is he this good? No, I wouldn't say so, you know? And, yeah, now see, this is interesting, because I didn't think to look up what his, like, goals against playoff teams versus non-playoff teams is. I would bet it's similarly not ideal, you know? But anyway, doesn't really matter so much. The broader point is, yeah, the Rangers are safe in a playoff spot, and I don't want to take anything away from the great, you know, Shesterkin should win the Vezina comfortably. I don't know that anybody else can make a claim at this point, except to say that he hasn't played a ton of games. Kreider is likely going to stay in the Rocket Richard convo for the remainder of the season. He won't win it, but in all likelihood, he won't win it, but he'll be up there, top five finish probably. And then the rest of the team, you're like, oh yeah, they have some pretty good players who can only play on the power play. That feels about right to me. And I don't know. I guess what's your, like, I'm sure you kind of feel similarly about them. Like, but what's your, like, what would you compare them to? Like, if you had to say, like, Rangers fans, pump your brakes. Like, here's where you should be thinking about this team in the recent history of
the— Yeah, I mean, if anything, I think there's sort of two separate tracks. On the one hand, yes, this team is legitimately good this year. It's not fake to have, you know, a goalie having a monster season. As you say, that's part of hockey. That's a guy that they have. It's not some fluky guy that's come completely out of nowhere. They've got a really, really good goaltender, and they got a ton of other talent. And I think you can feel good about them in that metro. I, You know, I most of us have Carolina as the number one team there, but New York's right up there. I don't take anything away from them. If the thinking is, hey, mission accomplished on the rebuild, this team is now set for, to be excellent for years to come, that's where I maybe worry just a bit, because goaltending is unpredictable. Even as sold as I am on Shesterkin, he's not going to be 940 year after year after year. And when he's not 940, some of the other holes that are still there will start to appear. So a great team this year. I don't know that they're as solid going forward as people might think. Now, the flip side to that is Lafreniere and Kako are still not doing all that much. And you've got, you know, certainly with Lafreniere, I think lots of reason to think he could still be a top tier player. So the optimist view is when that, if that happens, now they're really humming up front. So we'll see. But yeah, no, I'm done dismissing the Rangers. As the real deal, because, you know, like you say, you can't, any team you take away their best player is not going to be as good a team. But luckily for them, you don't have to do that. And if anything, when you're talking about a goalie who plays 2/3 of the season of the regular season and then plays every playoff game, which you assume is what'll happen in New York,
yeah,
you have reason to think we'll be even better in the playoffs than we've shown so far.
Right. So there are two teams that I kind of think of when I think of the Rangers this year, and you tell me what you think. The obvious comparison to draw is the 14-15 Montreal Canadiens.
Okay,
right, because yep. They had
the Carey Price MVP year.
They were a little below average. I don't even think they had they were below average at 5-on-5 and kind of like, you know, more aspects of the game. They didn't have the star power up front that the Rangers do to have a consistently good power play. But they did have the best goalie in the world having his best season ever, you know. 933 that year. So, really fucking good season. But the team that I also think of, now, who was the coach of the New York Rangers, and what team did he coach recently? You know, the Gerard Gallant, Vegas Golden Knights, mm-hmm. their first year.
The 2018, yep.
Yeah. They had a very similar situation where they got like 930 goaltending all year. They had an above average power. It's not as good as the Rangers is this year. But otherwise, you would look at this team and you would go, I mean, they're not that good, you know? Mm-hmm. And they went all the way to the Cup Final, and I think they won the Western Conference, like, in regular season.
They were
best Western
well
Conference
up there,
team.
Yeah.
So, like, this is kind of what I think of them as being. And, like, I don't want you all, like, all the Rangers fans out there to be like, oh, that means we're going to the Cup. They had a pretty easy path to the Cup Final that year. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
But that's such an interesting two teams to pick, because Vegas goes all the way to the Cup Final and has been an excellent team ever since. But there's a caveat with that coaching change.
The caveat is they made a ton of changes in that first summer to be like, we have to undergird this success with like actual good players in a way that the Rangers do not have the finance or like the cap flexibility to do so.
Yeah. And then Montreal, who have a great regular season, they go out the second round, and then that was 2015, did not win, missed the playoffs the next year. They don't win another playoff round until last year's run. So there's the other side of what it can look like.
Yeah. So I'm really curious to see what the Rangers do I think if they go out and get some rentals, you want to bolster this season, like, by all means, mm-hmm. you know, like, why not? They have a pretty good farm system. They have some assets that it wouldn't kill them to give away, just because they do have a lot of guys signed for the next few years. So, like, you know, there's not a lot of opportunities for prospects to make a case for the main roster. So, but What I wouldn't want to do if I was the Rangers is go out and get a guy that I think can help like 2-3 years from now, because I think the Rangers will have to accept that they're in the long term a lot farther away than the record makes it appear.
That's possible. Yeah. It's
like you said, it depends on Kako and Lafreniere. Like,
yeah. Lafreniere and you know, they've, Adam Fox is potentially,
oh my God, he's incredible.
Got, you know, more, I mean, aging wise, he in theory should get better. I paused because I was going to say he has another level to get to, but I'm not sure there's another level there's above another, Norris winner.
That's
but,
right.
And you know, Shesterkin's young for a goalie. Yeah, so there's, this certainly isn't a team that's duct taped together with a bunch of veterans where you say in 2 years it's all going to crumble.
No, absolutely not.
It will be interesting to see what approach they take in the offseason. Do they pat themselves on the back and say we've done it, or do they say let's take a real honest look at some of the areas where, you know, that may be weak and we can actually go out and try to address those from a position of strength and not wait until the cracks really appear and then nobody's willing to make a move with this.
Yeah, I mean, their real problem is that, like, they got to make a decision on Ryan Strome, who's having a nice season for himself, I should say. Like, he's not, like, an all-star or anything like that, but he's having a really nice season, and he's going to want a big raise. But next year is the year the new Fox contract kicks in, his ELC is over. And they got to figure out a backup goaltending situation, and it's like, I guess my point is, they kind of have to keep most of the band together, but if they lose Ryan Strome, I don't know what the solution is, you know? So.
Yep.
Yeah, they're a really interesting team. I don't, like I say, I don't think they're, like, it's fair to say they're a bad team, but they're not this good, certainly. And I'm curious to see what lessons they take from all this.
But, fair enough.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Hey, gang, it's another ad from our friends at Manscaped, and they will be making me say the word balls in this copy. So that's good news for you. And you know what else? You know what else is good news for you folks? Is the all-new ultra-premium collection from Manscaped that will allow you to upgrade your shower routine. This all-in-one hygiene, skin, and hair bundle is designed to upgrade every man's shower routine from head to toe. Your skin, hair, and balls will thank you. Save big by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping when you use the promo code PUCK. I took a shower this morning, as I am wont to do, and I used their 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner as well as their body wash, and both of them smell really good. So here's what it is. You lather on the cologne-infused ultra-premium body wash with aloe vera and sea salt to keep your skin feeling clean and moisturized. Then it's hair care time. You apply the 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner that cleanses and nourishes in one step. It's a non-greasy formula with a base of coconut water, green tea, aloe, turmeric, and sage. I don't know if I pronounce turmeric right, but yeah. Then you can hop out of the shower and protect yourself from body odor by applying the Manscaped aluminum-free deodorant. This deodorant dries clear and is also cologne-infused. There's also lip balm. There's a hydrating body spray. There's the lawnmower 4.0 electric trimmer, which it says here you can use on your balls. So yeah, you can get 20% off and free shipping as well with the promo code PUCK at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code PUCK at manscaped.com. It's time to get wet and clean with your new Manscaped shower routine. All right, for our last segment on the show here, I want to pose to you, Sean, a simple question. Are people getting increasingly deranged about awards and awards voting and that kind of thing? Because I feel like the answer is yes on my end.
Yeah. I think people are getting increasingly deranged in general, and awards is certainly that rising tide is sweeping that boat up, because we're not even 3/4 of the way to the end of the season, and people are already adamant about how they feel about certain awards, and we haven't even gotten to the point where, like, Michael Bunting wins the Calder and
right
31 other fan bases
well
try to burn the league headquarters down.
Yeah, so let's start with the Calder, because I think that is the one where it's like, much like when Kaprizov won last year, where people were like, but you don't understand, I don't want to listen to what the rules are for this award qualification. Like it or not, Michael Bunting qualifies as a rookie.
Yes.
And if you think...
That's it.
And if you think, well, it's not fair, because look at look how old he is and look who he plays with. Well, they don't say in the rules of the award, like, we'll allow 26, but you should definitely take points off, and also take points off if he happens to be playing with a guy who should potentially win the Hart Trophy.
Yeah, and it's also very clearly not the Best Prospect Award, which is how some people treat. I mean, look, I'm a Leafs fan. I've enjoyed the Michael Bunting experience very much. Keep a lid on it, but you know, if Anaheim calls up and says, "Hey, do you want Trevor Zegras for Michael?" Yeah, that's done. The fax is already coming through the system, and there's at least 10 other guys on the Calder ballot that would be true for, because he's 26, and you know, we understand what's going on here, but that's not what the award is. And when it comes to the Hart Trophy, as many of us have pointed out, it's kind of ambiguous what the league wants us to exactly be voting on, which leads to a lot of interesting debates, but also a lot of just garbage yelling at each other. The Calder is not ambiguous. It's very clear on what you're voting on, and based on that, Michael Bunting should be in the conversation. Even all that stuff aside, I'm not arguing that he is the best rookie this year, but he is a rookie.
He's certainly having a top two or maybe three season for a rookie. I think so. What's interesting is, I mentioned in the last segment, I mentioned like Shesterkin, like people might choose to talk themselves out of his candidacy. I think it would be insane to do it, but like, I can see people doing it because he doesn't have a huge number of games played like a lot of goalies do.
That makes no sense at all to me.
But
first of all, the fact that he's not going to start 70 games, but nobody does that anymore.
No.
But the argument that goalies shouldn't win the MVP because they don't play as many games as forwards who play 80 games is insane to me, because goalies are on the ice the entire game.
Right. They play more
Austin Matthews is
than
playing
Austin
21 minutes a night. Like, if we're doing this based on who's on the ice, goalies should win every year.
We'll circle back to the Hart in a second, but the reason I brought up the games played thing is, I think you can make a very coherent case for Jeremy Swayman's Calder candidacy. He's been, I think he didn't do so well in his most recent game against Columbus, but like, he's a 927 goalie this year. And that's with a slowish start. So, you know, if he keeps up what he's done in recent weeks, and it looks like he's going to, just in terms of the Bruins have not been given a reason to not play him anytime soon, you know? So I think he's a guy where you can make a very, very sound case for his candidacy, but everybody seems to have decided it's Moritz Seider in Detroit is the winner.
He's
been great. Obviously,
absolutely
he's been
be
great.
Yeah. And again, you know, head and shoulders above most of these guys, and as far as somebody you would want your organization to have going forward.
Right.
That's not what's being measured here. I did see somebody, it was one of the Leaf fans, I can't remember which one, but they tweeted that the best case scenario would be for Michael Bunting to win, and then because he's a Leaf, everybody would freak out, and then they would change the rule to a younger age. And he said that would be great for three reasons. First of all, Michael Bunting's cool. Number two, people flipping out over anything Leafs related is always funny. And number three, the rule should change, and this is probably the only way to nudge it down a few more years.
Yeah.
But I mean, and just for the record, I voted for Artemi Panarin over Connor McDavid that 1 year when Panarin was 24 and McDavid had been hurt, and everybody knew Connor McDavid was the better prospect, although Panarin has obviously turned out to be excellent. But that's, I'm not making this up because it's a Leaf. This is something I felt like that was a no-brainer that year, that this guy, even though he's 24, even though he had played overseas, based on what the rules said, this guy was eligible, and therefore he was the best rookie.
Yeah. Like I said, I think Sider's going to win it just because everybody seems to have decided we can't vote for the 26-year-old who plays with Austin Matthews, which, like, I guess I get that argument.
Hmm.
But at the same time, it's like,
well, although, I mean, not what the way that line is going right now, I mean, 2 weeks from now, he might have
70 points,
10 or 15 more points. Yeah. Like, it's
absolutely. Yeah, no, he's having an unbelievable season. And the other thing with Bunting is that if you look at his, like, individualized impacts, like, with everybody, like, when you take him away from Matthews, like, he's obviously not as good. But when he plays with everybody else, he makes them better. Like, literally everybody else he's played any significant number of minutes with on the Leafs this year, they're all like, oh, yeah, no, we're insanely good. So,
yeah. And the other thing that is both should work in his favor, but will probably work against him, is maybe his top skill is drawing penalties, which is
nobody cares about or starting, pays attention to that.
I think people are starting to realize is an underrated skill, especially when you got a team like the Leafs where the power play is very good. Each penalty you draw is the equivalent of getting like a quarter of a goal, based on how effective the power play is. But also the way he draws those penalties is freaking annoying. And I think a lot of people won't want to necessarily. I mean, there was a moment last night in last night's game where, like, he punched a guy and then the guy punched him back and Michael Bunting died on the ice.
That's right.
They brought out, they put him in a coffin. Then the coffin broke and he fell out and he was naked for some reason. It was very upsetting. But I could see people being like, I'm not going to reward that.
As the ref is talking to him after that, he's going, I didn't rig shit.
Yeah.
So let's again, let's just get into the Hart Trophy thing because people turned absolutely fucking feral about it this week for some reason. And it's basically, let's say, how do I want to say this? Older people who are like, but you don't understand. Look how many secondary assists Jonathan Huberdeau has. His problem.
Well, that was the thing, right? Like, let's just say it was Alan Walsh, his agent.
Yeah, well, that started it, but then, like, that created a snowball effect where a bunch of people said the same shit. So.
Yeah. But, I mean, he went after Dom because Dom wrote a piece and he didn't have him in his top 10, which, debatable. Obviously, a guy who's that high in points is going to be is going to show up on ballots. And then some other people, I think Ray Ferraro and other people jumped in to say that they had him on their list. But, yeah, Alan Walsh kind of had a bit of a Twitter meltdown over it.
This is the guy who did the sword in the back. So, like, I'm not...
Yes.
This
is kind of what he does. Yes. And you can't be like, hey, this guy's... He's fun and entertaining until it gets directed at somebody I like and then
now,
it's out of bounds.
We can reveal exclusively here that you were one of the Athletic staffers who texted Alan Walsh to say you agree that Dom's an idiot, right?
Yes, yeah. I did. I just out of nowhere that I sent him one of those definitely very real and not made up texts saying that Dom was a disgrace. And I just want to say, in general, if I hold any opinions that anyone out there doesn't agree with, many people are secretly texting me as well to agree.
That's so right.
I can't reveal, but
so many people who say I'm actually really smart.
It's secret anonymous text that I can't reveal the existence of, even though I just did. Which, by the way, is pretty cool to know if you're someone who texts Alan Walsh that he may if you assume that's anonymous, he may just pull it out to win an argument at some point. Yeah. So keep that in mind. But yeah, I get lots of all the smartest people text me to tell me that I am also smart all the time.
That's right. The thing about Jonathan Huberdeau is that he has a lot of secondary assists that buoy his point total. And there's nothing wrong with having secondary assists. He has only one more than Connor McDavid in an extra game played, right? So it's like not crazy, but you know who usually gets second assists is defensemen. You know, and yes. So for a forward to have his case bolstered with secondary assists is maybe a little that's when you get into iffy territory. And again, like, he doesn't have good defensive impacts this year, you know?
No.
And so, like, this is a lot.
And also is playing on the Panthers' second line.
Yeah, and is
with Sam Bennett, and which, I mean, their first line is
one of the Barkov line, the league, yeah.
And you know, but there is I think a fair argument to be made. Can the most valuable player in the entire league be second line player on his own team?
Right.
Which
maybe not. You know,
maybe not.
So yeah, like that is a little bit tricky for sure. And yeah, it gets to a situation where, you know, you're just doing the points thing again. This is the Dreisaitl thing from a few years ago where it's like, well, he plays with Connor McDavid. So that, and you know, they get all the power play time, you could ever want. And he doesn't play defense. And people that year manufactured, like, no, he actually does play defense. And it's like,
yeah, oh, which he didn't.
I guess I didn't know that.
But the thing that year was McDavid did miss a chunk of time, and Dreisaitl kind of kept the team afloat.
Yeah, but then there was another part of the season where he was like invisible for the entire month of November. Not that this is applying to Huberdeau, but people were like, well, when McDavid was out, he kept the team going. And it's like, that's true. What about this entire month? And they were like, well, you can't count that. That was November. What are you talking about?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
No, but it did give kind of the hook to his story. Like, well, how can the second best player on the team? Yeah. Well, it was because the first best guy was gone and he picked up the ball and ran with it. And that hasn't happened in Florida.
No, absolutely not. But with that having been said, I'm not asking you to like go down your list or anything like that. But like ballparking it, I think you would say Austin Matthews absolutely is going to be in the top three, right?
Yeah, right now Matthews is, like, he's so hot right now that
it's unbelievable. Every time like he turns the game on, he's doing something incredible.
And we're starting to get, you know, again, predictably, now, you know, this is the new, well, maybe Connor McDavid's title as best player in the world is up for, and I'm not there yet, but Matthews is the level he's at, like I thought it was a great point. I just saw it come across my Twitter feed. It was Jeff Vallette, Jeffler, on Twitter, who people probably know of. But he said, like, it almost feels like right now, maybe a lot of people, especially in the media, are, you know, obviously there's a ton of hype around Austin Matthews because he's a Leaf, and there always is. But there also feels like there's this reluctance to go too far on what this guy's doing, because you know you're going to get swarmed by people going, oh, it's only because he's a Leaf, here comes the Leaf stuff again.
I mean, the other thing, yeah, it's he's getting more attention because he's on, you know, national TV in almost every single game, but also, like, he's the league leader in goals by a decent margin.
Like, he is the best player in the world right now.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You know, if you had to play a game tonight against the aliens, you know, from Space Jam, he's your first pick right now over McDavid. Whether that'll be the case 2 weeks from now
or a year from now or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
The way he's playing right now is if prime Alex Ovechkin, 60 plus goals Alex Ovechkin, also played elite defense.
Yeah.
That's literally how good he's been this year. I don't know what other argument you want to come up with of, like, because I've seen people, you know, if you go by the real the true like definition of value. Jason Robertson, player judged most available. Okay, all right. Like, yeah, no, he's having a great season. Don't get me wrong, but like, grow up. Also, you know, like you're doing the thing. He's got. Yeah, he's probably arguably the best player on the Dallas Stars, and the Dallas Stars all of a sudden are very hot. But where was this guy 6 months ago? Or and, 6 months yeah. ago? 6 weeks ago.
But this is right. This is what some people think of as the definition of value, right? If you Thanos snap the guy out of existence, Dallas is missing the playoffs. The Leafs are
missing the playoffs also.
A wild card, yeah. But maybe also missing the playoffs.
Right.
But,
well, yeah, I guess the East isn't maybe that competitive. But you know what I mean. Like you remove Connor McDavid from the Edmonton Oilers, which, hey, they probably have to do it this summer, right, folks? but they still have Leon Draisaitl. And so, like, the one or the other, like, but people just make it up every fucking year. They just go, well, this year I think it should go to the guy who scored a million points. And it's like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
What about next year? Well, it can't go to the guy with the most points. Because if
it's okay to just say that you want the guy on your favorite team to win and you don't want the guy on your least favorite team
and
to
like,
win, and that's...
I gotta be honest with you. You know what's driving me crazy this week is, or the last couple of weeks is... People in Colorado, you know, Cale Makar has a legitimate claim to be a Hart Trophy guy. And people in Dallas, like, and when I say people, I mean media people. Like, literal articles, like, Cale Makar for Hart? Some people are saying, and it's like parentheses, me, I'm saying that. And you're getting the same shit for Robertson in Dallas and that kind of thing. And it's like, you don't have to do this. You know, like, you can just go, damn, look how good this guy's season is without also saying, and don't you think I should be leading the campaign for this guy to win an award?
Yep.
Like, Cale Makar is almost certainly going to win the Norris. I think you're galaxy braining yourself if you...
Oh, you don't think Hedman's legitimately got a...
Hedman is having an unbelievable year after he was bad last year. He was flat out not good. In the regular season. And then in the playoffs, he was fucking unbelievable again. But like, this is a thing where it gets into a little bit of the Mike Green territory of like, are we just being like, holy shit, look at all those goals. He's a defenseman. He has 20 goals. That's crazy, you know? And I don't want to just say like points is that, but like when Cale Makar is on the ice, the Avalanche are even better than we already think of the Avalanche as being, you know, which is crazy because like he's on the Avalanche.
Yep.
And like in some ways that makes it easy, but like the Avalanche at 5-on-5 have 65 goals and 35 against with Cale Makar on the ice this year. At 5-on-5.
That's madness.
That's insane. And so, like, you know, even Hedman, who's, again, having a what would be a Norris-worthy year in any other season, but Cale Makar is finally, like, in full destroyer of worlds mode, you know? So I can't get too mad at people for being like, Cale Makar should... But like MVP, come on.
Yeah, the one last point I'll make is the dumbest take, and get ready to hear it a lot. You've probably already heard it, but anytime anyone says, you know, Austin Matthews is a favorite to win the MVP, inevitably someone's like, oh yeah, because he plays in Toronto,
right?
We all got to vote for the Toronto guy. Like, yeah. The Toronto Maple Leafs, notorious for being voted to awards.
Yeah.
Like, they've had, like, literally, here is the last 50 years of awards for the Maple Leafs. You had Austin Matthews winning the Calder.
Which,
you had
a runaway. Should have been a runaway.
Yes, absolutely. Of course, you know, was not a hard call. And then, of the awards that anybody cares about, on the 93 team, Gilmore won the Selke and Pat Burns won the Jack Adams. And that's it, going back to... 50 plus years. And I think Mitch Marner was the first guy to be a first team all-star for the Leafs in something similar time frame last year. There is, you know, even factoring in, obviously, the Leafs were bad for a lot of that stretch, there is clearly no bias towards the Leafs for award voting as much as your as much as you hate that your brother-in-law once said that Doug Gilmore was better than Wayne Gretzky. You don't get to just make that up. But we'll see. And Alexander McGillney won the Lady Bing, so.
Hey.
And then I think refused to go to the awards ceremony.
That's right. How dare you say that? That should
have him in the Hall of Fame just alone.
So let's do quickly the Shesterkin heart conversation thing. Like,
yeah.
I totally get why people are saying he should win. If he was not on the Rangers would be absolute dog shit. Absolutely, 100% agree with that. Obviously. With that having been said, I am really a guy who kind of subscribes to the guy who wins the Vezina is the most valuable player every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that makes perfect sense to me. And so, like, this gets into what the definition of the award is, and it doesn't say the skater judged most valuable to his team.
No.
So.
It certainly doesn't say forward. No. Because we never vote exactly for a defenseman for this thing either.
And yet, I just said it about Cale Makar. Like, let me put it this way. If you want to make it so that every year, whoever your top five is, like, the best goalie, three of the best forwards, and the best, like, you have to have a goalie and a defenseman on your ballot every year.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it interesting to me. But again, that's not how the award is written up.
And I've seen several people say that goalies already have an award. They have the Vezina. Defensemen have the Norris. So that's why forward. No, there's nothing.
Yeah,
are making up rules. There is nothing to suggest that is how it should work. There is nothing to suggest the Hart Trophy is in any way limited to any position, and the fact that it almost always goes to a forward is a failure on the voters' part. It is indicative of something being wrong in the way we're thinking about things. If you wanted to say, you know, let's make the Wayne Gretzky Award for best forward, and then, you know, each position group will have its own major award, and then the MVP. Oh, sure, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But that, until that day comes, I don't have to only vote for forwards on my Hart ballot.
Yep.
There's and look, I've had a Hart ballot several times, and I have fallen into this trap where I look at it and I'm like, I got five forwards listed here.
Yeah.
It's tough, but it shouldn't. In other than occasional outlier seasons, it shouldn't be that way.
I'll say this, and then we can leave it there if you want. This year, I think, is the year where I'm like, the top three, the finalists, should absolutely be forward, defenseman, goalie, and you can pick the order. And that forward, mm-hmm, unless something horrible happens, really ought to be Austin Matthews. The defenseman probably should be Cale Makar. You know, again, like, something horrible can happen and Victor Hedman's right there. Mm-hmm. And then Shesterkin, obviously, like, yep, there's not even an argument for another goalie. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it. I don't think I could put Cale Makar first, but like, I can't really choose between Matthews and Shesterkin right now. So,
yep. Yeah. I had somebody ask me yesterday, like, if you had to vote today, and I said I'd have Shesterkin first, Matthews second, and then Matthews went out and got a hat trick. And
right.
It's like, oh, okay. Thanks. Keeping it interesting. And, you know, there's 20 plus games left in the season. There will be twists and turns, and probably somebody that we didn't even just mention now will emerge, mm-hmm, based
absolutely
on. And that's the fun of it. That's good. But if that person who emerges is a goalie or a defenseman, then we need to vote for them, regardless of what your bias might tell you.
Yeah. So, that's it. We're done. Sean, what you got for a plug, brother?
I got stuff on The Athletic. I got the return of the Who Didn't He Play For quiz today. This is the goalie edition. So far, people are doing worse on this one than others. So I guess they're all Hart voters. They don't know anything about goalies. And I'll be on with Ian Mendez tomorrow to talk about all the trades that'll happen 3 minutes after we finish this show.
Yep, that sounds good. Yeah, for me, go to epringside.com, sign up for an annual subscription, use the code ILOVEEP, all one word, all capital letters, and you will get an extra 3 months tacked on to the end of your annual subscription. So it's really 15 months for the price of 12. Wow, what a deal. And then also check out the Puck Soup Patreon. Confluence of events has made it such that there, I think we published 3 bonus episodes in the last 24 hours. So me and Sean ran down the 11 most important trades of the last decade that happened before deadline day, but within two weeks of deadline day, but not on deadline day itself. Me and Greg and Greg's best friend outside of hockey talked at length about both the movie The Batman, which, Sean, I'm assuming you haven't seen.
Of course not.
Yeah, okay. No. Okay, that's what I figured. And just Batman in general, because me and Greg's friend Andy love Batman. And then Greg and his wife Ruby just did the season opening episode of Mizanpod, the Top Chef recap podcast that we've been doing for, I think, 2 or 3 years now. And people seem to like that. So on top of everything else, we will also be doing a mailbag right after this. So head on over to the Puck Soup Patreon. It's patreon.com/pucksoup and check it all out. And thanks for the support. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. Don't yell at us about what we said about the awards today. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to a different commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.